Do you remember first coming across Mike Davis's work?
I do. I was really struck by the very opening of City of Quartz, because what is the subtitle of City of Quartz? Excavating the Future in Los Angeles?
Yeah, that's right.
The whole idea of excavating the future, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And he gives us this radical history of the struggles and the movements in Los Angeles and its formation as a city. And since then, right? And so if you were going to write a book about that, how would you do it? How would you start it? What would the beginning be? You know, would you be really linear, whatever? What he does is he takes this beautiful literary approach. And he, I don't know if you remember the opening, but he says, I'm going to start telling the history of Los Angeles from the standpoint of where I am right now. And he's standing on a hillside that was the location of a utopian socialist commune.
Right.
In the 1920s. I believe it was the 1920s. Could have even been earlier than that. And I think they lasted as a commune for about 15 years or 20 years. I forget the specifics. But it was a kind of stroke of genius, I thought. Like, oh, I'm going to talk about the history of this city beginning with this perspective of people who really try to envision something different. And not just envision, but act on it.
Yeah.
And I thought he was a beautiful writer, too. And that was a great choice for an opening of a book.
Yeah, you know, what that book, I think I read that book first, probably in the early 1990s when I started graduate school in Southern California. And what was interesting about that beginning, God, it's been a lot of years since I've read that book, but I think that that utopian community was not very far away from where I was when I was reading that book. Because I was reading it in Riverside at the time. And what was interesting about that, as you were saying, is like he's talking about the history of these experiments in different kinds of utopian and labor activism that you don't really often hear about. And in, you know, in the landscape of Los Angeles or Southern California at the time, just all of that kind of history just seemed glossed over. And it seemed to me at the time that, you know, when you're, if you're living in Southern California, everything is just like sort of glossed over with freeways and plaza malls. It's just miles of sort of suburban kind of shopping mall architecture. And to think about that underneath all of those layers is this rich history of labor struggles, and people trying to build alternatives to capitalism was really striking to me living at the time where I was. And so I was really struck by the sort of way in which he was trying to create a really sort of multidimensional history of the United States in that kind of way, focusing on a place that seemed at the time like it didn't have a lot of history, that it didn't have a lot to offer. And, you know, for me, it really sort of brought to mind the idea that so much of American life at that time was sort of being, there was so much sort of history just being ignored as, you know, the Clinton generation, the Clinton administration is at the time, you know, globalization is envisioning these new ways of living, new ways of democracy, new ways of economy that are very forward oriented and seemed very forgetful of all the struggles in order to get there in a kind of way. So, you know, I keep talking about like the glossing over. There just seemed to be that those period in the early 1990s seems to be a sort of glossing over of history of struggle. And City of Quartz is really important because it wanted us to remember that underneath the sort of layer of that sediment was a much sort of richer history of struggle.
Including for racial justice.
Yes.
early 1990s when that came out, people were already thinking in terms of what became known as intersectionality. And Davis, in this book, brings together these streams, these critiques of Los Angeles and its history, not only looking at what happened and being able to critique that, but also, as he says, excavating the future by unburying these lost histories, or what some radical historians have called a usable past. Like, the past isn't just this set figures and facts that we have to bow in front of, but it is about remembering and how we remember, you know, and how we imagine. And how we remember the past, of course, impacts how we see our present and how we might understand possible futures.
Yeah, the other sort of figure that, you know, that Mike Davis always, I don't know if this is an apt kind of comparison, but the figure that always sort of I think of alongside Mike Davis sometimes is D.G. Kelly, Robin D.G. Kelly.
Oh, yeah.
Right, with the whole sort of emphasis on freedom dreams. Again, the sort of idea about like looking at the past as ways in which people have tried to struggle for building a radical imagination of what the future might look like.
Yes.
And so, you know, as you're pointing out, struggles for racial justice, this is what Kelly's been doing with his work, right, in Freedom Dreams, that I think was just also had an anniversary last year, about a 20-year anniversary.
Did.
But I think both of these historians have that kind of emphasis in trying to find the usable history, the usable past that can inspire us when we might feel that we're being... when the layers of sort of capitalist consciousness are just sort of inundating us with more consumerism and more worries about inflation and costs, and realizing that there were a lot of struggles beforehand having to deal with very similar issues about that, and that people weren't consigned to their fate.
Right, right. And it opens up all those questions. What's consumerism trying to sell us? Happiness. Supposedly, right? So it opens up all those questions about are there other ways of understanding happiness and fulfillment than right. The one that's sold to us daily?
Right.
Right. And so he looks into that. And one of the things I always appreciated about Davis is from very early, he would look at the intersection of ecology and ecological struggles with racial justice struggles, with class struggle. And movements that kind of arose out of these intersections. So right. It, not only in City of Quartz, but in all his works since then, he has tried to envision holistically this kind of intersection of concerns.
Yeah, I mean, that came out really clearly. What was it, Ecology of Fear?
Yeah.
I think in 1998, which talked about Southern California as a landscape, an apocalyptic landscape of the sort of confluence of all these different kinds of forces that could lead to major disaster, that in some sense was really prophetic, right? Starting in the last few years with all like the major fires that occurred in Southern California that sort of overwhelmed so many municipalities in California, a lot of them as a result of the droughts. And you know, and that's tied also then to climate change and, you know, the fossil fuel economies, right? And so he was really early on trying to sort of think about the ways in which Los Angeles was this place that exemplified all of the dangers and the worries of this era, and the possible apocalyptic dangers that we might face.
Yeah.
So I know that he was, you know, criticized a lot for being kind of nihilistic in his discussions, particularly in things like Ecology of Fear. But I think he really sort of, he was able to sort of predict in a way a lot of the kinds of worries and problems that we now fear on the West Coast, having to do with climate change and drought and the ways in which we are not really prepared to deal with these kinds of major catastrophes. And that it's really poor people that suffer the most when we allow these kinds of structures to change our world around us this way.
Yeah, one of the things I appreciate about his writing for me that's been important is that, you know, I said he started City of Quartz by looking at this utopian socialist community in LA. But he also realized that the right wing, that the capitalist disorder also has their utopias. Right. And so when he's writing about LA and the imagination of disaster, how apocalypse is represented to us through, say, science fiction films like Blade Runner, right? He also did that for the ways that empire is driven across the world, and the histories of empires is driven also by an elite social imagining of what happiness is and what success is. And, you know, that the right wing and capitalist disorder has its own sense of utopia and yearnings and longings that want to come together in this very much less inclusive utopia. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was really a sort of a nice way of him being able to criticize all the neoliberal globalization movement at that time, which was positing this bright future, the new world order. And he was very good about questioning whether or not that vision would actually promote the kind of flourishing society that they were offering, you know, by showing that it was really creating this kind of possible hellscape of disaster and ecological collapse. And I think that was that tension was really good for him in sort of very prescient in a way of being able to see early on the kinds of struggles that we're facing today. I mean, one thing I wanted to say about Davis's work is that, you know, he wasn't just sort of analyzing the possible problems, but as you sort of pointed out, talking about the usable past as a source of inspiration for struggles today. The other work that I mentioned this to before, the other work for me that was really influential about him or from him was the work that he did in 2000 called Magical Urbanism,
right,
which was not looking at the past, but the present, where he looked at the ways in which this massive influx of particularly Mexican and Central American immigrants to Southern California was changing the landscape in a way that was really different from the kind of romanticized history of Southern California, but also in a way that was also confronting the realities of the neoliberal globalization project that was underway at the time too, right? Because in his analysis, right, all these Latinx immigrants were bringing different kinds of values, particularly values of labor struggle, values of community solidarity, mutual aid, and all these things, right, that were very, very different from the sort of kind of suburban model that had been promoted in Southern California for so many years, and was a possible way of confronting the kind of fragmentation that neoliberal globalization was creating, and that so much of their immigration was being fueled by that neoliberal globalization project. That for him, looking at the particular communities of Latin American immigrants in Southern California, was a symptom of these kinds of larger structural issues, but he saw hope in perhaps in the ways in which these communities were being built for a different kind of oppositional consciousness, right? Which I think is really true, because, you know, just right after he published that, let's say 6 years or so, that's when the Day Without an Immigrant or the May Day protest started, particularly in Southern California, right, where you had millions of undocumented folks standing up for the first time in public saying, look, we're here and you need to recognize us and we're not going away. And that in some sense shifted a lot of discussions about immigration reform, the recognition that there are millions of people, right? The estimates are close to somewhere between 13 to 16 million people who are undocumented, but are features of the American working class that aren't simply going to be going away. And I think that's influenced thinking about labor in the past, say, 30 years in a lot of important ways.
Yeah, and I think it's important to note that Mike Davis comes from a working class background. And before he really started writing, and actually while he was writing his earlier works, he was a trucker and worked as a trucker. And, you know, got into kind of sidelined into writing and at some point teaching, but he wasn't primarily an academician. And he came to consciousness during the civil rights movement and the new left, the emergence of the new left, the anti-Vietnam War struggles, but always labor struggles foremost, and interracial labor struggles, especially were important to him. So, yeah.